As the White House threatens to take over state elections, restrict abortion nationwide, and take away our health care, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is the last line of defense for our rights. That's why the Supreme Court election on April 7th is so critical. The ACLU does not endorse or oppose candidates, but wants you to make an informed decision. When it comes to abortion rights, Maria Lazar supported overturning Roe v. Wade and is endorsed by groups that want to ban abortion. Chris Taylor voted against abortion bans and defended abortion rights while working with Planned Parenthood. And on the issue of voting rights in Wisconsin, Maria Lazar defended efforts to rig elections for one political party through extreme gerrymandering of congressional and legislative districts. Chris Taylor opposes rigging the system with extreme partisan gerrymandering. On April 7th, stand up for our rights. Paid for by American Civil Liberties Union, Incorporated.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister, what's going on, what's going on.
Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. And I'm so excited about the new sponsorship with the ACLU and What's Going On with Earl Ingram. Just a marriage made in heaven. So I'm really excited as not only about that great news, but I'm even more excited about my good friend and guest this morning, Robert Miranda, community activist. And if I took the time to talk about all the different things that he does, it would certainly overwhelm the time slot. So I just want to begin by saying, hey, welcome back, dear brother. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. I appreciate you expressing those beautiful sentiments.
You know, man, you are a Vietnam. I mean, you are an Afghanistan.
Beirut
veteran. And so you are a Marine. You are a guy who decided to, you know, put your life on the line and fight for this nation. And so it's always a great perspective when I have you on, because I used to always ask the question of you, man, you made a decision to fight and you were there. And you know, we talk about things and we say, hey, Robert, thank you for your service. But yet we have no idea at all of the impact of that, what that service was, what you guys went through, and what veterans go through before they become veterans. When you wind up, you know, halfway around the world in places you don't know, and your family is no longer with you physically, only in memory, and you got a new family, and that's the guy who stands next to you who has done the exact same thing that you have. Tell us a little bit, Robert, about how that is, and because I think it's important before we get into our conversation. There's conversation now about sending Marines, putting them on the ground in Iran. You've been on the ground. Give us a little background on what that's like, man.
Well, it's tense. It gives you a lot of jitters, you know, the butterflies in your stomach. But it also,
hardens you,
gives you focus, you know, but it also gives you this resolve of, making sure that you got the back of your fellow Marine, and that Marine, you know, has your back, you know. That's, and the bottom line is, once you're on the ground, once you're, standing post, once you're doing patrols, once you're, doing what you got to do.
On the wall, I think.
Yeah, on that watch. You know, it is the Marine with the Marine. These two together, side by side, standing shoulder to shoulder, back to back. Everything else doesn't matter. Them watching each other's back, them taking care of each other. And that's when you really get that powerful camaraderie feeling, that love for your brother, that push to not only be vigilant, to do the job that needs to be done, but to really appreciate your compatriot, your comrade, to be able to know that that individual has your back. You go down, you know that individual is going to pick you up and take you back home. If you're down, you know they're not going to leave you there. They're going to pick your body up and bring you back.
So it's total faith.
Yep.
In each other. Person, yeah. Right.
It's the bottom line. It's total faith in each other. It's, you know, trusting in your training, trusting in everything that you've been taught, trusting in your leadership, in the command, trusting that everything that logistically needs to be done to help you win. But the bottom line is that individual that you are with, that stand in the wall with you, has your back and you have theirs. And that is really all that counts. Because for me, and I know for a lot of other Marines, when you go into battle, you just want to make sure that you're not left in the dust. You're not left there to rot
that
in another country.
That it mattered.
Yeah, that you are being brought back home. You know, that's one of the things I always thought. I just want to be brought back home. If I go down, I want my body to be brought back home. You knew that was going to happen because your comrades were going to make sure that happened.
Does it matter, Robert, whether or not the decision to send you into battle is right or wrong as a Marine or as an enlisted man? Does it ever cross your mind, or you just have faith in the people who are making that call? How important is that?
You have faith in your command to make that call to send you in. As enlisted junior rank, enlisted people, you're not really thinking much about the politics.
You can't.
You know, your job is to do what you are ordered to do. And, you know, you may think that there's something not right about it, but that's not your place. You didn't sign that dotted line to say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do here, but no, it's just, you're going to do it, period. And you're going to follow the orders, period. Now, all that other stuff, the politics and all that stuff, as a junior ranking soldier or Marine, you leave that up to the generals, the admirals, right, the politicians. You know, they're the ones who's going to have to ultimately answer for your death, for why you died. You, as a rank and file soldier, Marine, sailor, airman, you're there to do the job. And all that other stuff is left to the people to hold accountable those individuals that caused your death.
So, Robert, the reason I asked you that, you and I have talked for a long time. I've never asked you or any other veteran that question, but I thought prior to our conversation that we should hear from someone who has been on the battlefield and someone who understands what is happening right now with many enlisted guys right now who are training for what could conceivably be on the ground and in Iran. And I guess I know it's not something that the enlisted guys think about, but you as a veteran, mm-hmm, your thoughts about how, you know, right now this is being set up and they're preparing to send young men, put them on the ground. Do you think this is?
No, I feel real, real bad about what's happening now. And that's not saying that, oh, you're being unpatriotic, right, not supporting the. No, that's nothing to do with this.
So supporting the troops is not.
Supporting the troops is very important. That's very important. But to speak out against why they're involved, that is even more important. Because it is important for the public, for veterans to say, look, wait a minute. We're sending our young men and women into harm's way for what? If we look at what's happening today, we could actually equate what's happening today to what the Japanese did to us in World War II. If you recall, in World War II, we were, before the attack on Pearl Harbor, we were involved in discussions.
Right.
Trying to find a way to resolve our differences.
Right.
Then Pearl Harbor hit. And the United States was taken by surprise. Because all this time, we were in discussion.
Right.
There was negotiations. Things were going well. Look at what happened before we struck Iran. In February, they were having meetings between the United States, Iran. Jared Kushner and all these other clowns were involved in that meeting as well.
Right.
And in February of this year, after the meeting, the discussion was that things were going well, that Iran actually was capitulating, yes, on some things. As negotiations go well, as negotiations are moving, a few months later, the United States attack. Now, what do you think makes a whole population even more angry than you are in a negotiation trying to resolve things and then you're attacked? Just like in the United States, when Japan attacked us, it riled up and united the country. Because we were upset at the duplicity, at the treachery of what Japan did to us. Iranians are feeling the same way. They're feeling the same way. They're looking at this as, wait a minute. We were in negotiations. We were talking. And here you go and attack us. Take out the supreme leadership.
Leader. Yeah.
And on top of that, kill 170 of our children. And you think those people in that country are like, okay, well, let's just turn the other cheek on this? You got a whole nation now upset. And that's what the media isn't reporting on. They might be saying, oh, there might be Iranians out there who want to see regime change. Not today. Those people aren't going to jump out when the mass majority of Iranians now are angry that they were backstabbed and attacked during all these talks that was going on.
So, Robert, you were in Lebanon. And right now, Israel is in Lebanon.
Yep.
And basically laying waste.
Taking out the southern portion where Hezbollah and all of them are. Yep.
And so, but there are Lebanese people there.
Yep. Lebanese, right? Yep.
Who have nothing to do with any of that.
A lot of innocent people being sacrificed for political purposes. A lot of people, you know. Israel understands they're having issues in Lebanon. Trump just recently tried to get the president of Syria to get involved. To help Israel. What are we doing here? Now we're trying to get another Muslim country to join Israel to attack
their brothers.
Their brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, these people don't understand the dynamics of the politics here. And you could see that. The president of Syria said, are you kidding me? I'm not doing this. Why am I going to foment sectarian violence in my country and my people uprising against me to join Israel in an attack against our brothers in Lebanon? This is just madness that the White House don't understand these very basic basic politics. But he's going to ask the president of Syria to do that. And of course, the president of Syria is going to deny that. He's not going to join in on this.
Let me ask you, Robert. So what we've done is we've, as you listen to the president, we've got the most powerful military in the world, Pete Hegseth. We've got air power. We've got supreme air power. And we have the we control the horizontal. We control the vertical, the outer limits. It's what we're there. I mean, this is exactly the way they're sounding. But here's what I was thinking, Robert. We bombed Japan before Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
Unrelenting. We dropped bombs on them. They didn't say surrender.
They wouldn't surrender at all.
We dropped all those bombs in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
More bombs than we had ever dropped, even in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
The people didn't surrender.
Right.
We dropped all kinds of bombs in Afghanistan.
Right.
The people didn't surrender.
Right.
We're dropping munitions more than we're backing up the truck.
Right.
And I was listening. Now there's what is it, man? The biggest bomb,
the MOB,
5,000 pound.
Yeah.
And they're dropping these bombs that just, come on, man, they lay waste to anything around it.
And in dropping all these bombs in Iran, have you seen, well, it could be AI, I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. Have you seen a lot of these videos where they are actually showing people marching to where the bombs are being dropped?
Oh, man.
They're showing the world. They're ready. Just like the Japanese. They were showing the world, we will sacrifice for the emperor. They're showing the world, we will sacrifice for our supreme leader. This is going to be a bloodbath. These people ain't going to give up. You know, they're showing the world they're ready. And you know, this guy at the White House, Cheeto Man, sitting there talking about this is fun. You see the comment he made? This is fun. We're bombing. I'm having fun.
Hey, give me that. Give me the statue of the B-2. And he looks at it. Oh, what a beautiful thing. This is he kind of had a, you know, mock up of the B-2, and it was, but Robert, the point I'm trying to make is, it's already historically we know that bombing is not going to give you what you want.
Of course,
so
not.
I know. Yeah. So how many bombs can you drop? Right, at some point in time, you're going to exhaust at the rate they're bombing.
Yeah,
you know, every day it's even more. It's going to be bigger than the last. Man, don't you understand? Iran is a large landmass.
Right.
Okay? I don't care how many bombs you drop, you can't cover all that landmass, right?
That is a natural fortress, Iran is.
Because it's surrounded.
Their mountain regions on their borders. Iran, I read somewhere, where was it? Iran is like older than all the other Middle Eastern nations around there. They were Persians,
right?
You know, they have a history of war,
defense,
and winning. That's a proud people, man. You know, just like the Japanese were. They were very proud people. The samurai code for them. There's a code over there as well, and they are a proud people. So they're ready for this. They want this. It's like when the foreign minister was asked, are you prepared for American boots on the ground? And he had that like smile on his face, like, we're waiting for them. Of course they're waiting for us.
Well, they got a million man army.
They're ready. You know, and they ain't playing with Scud missiles like Iraq. Okay.
No.
You know, these people have precision bombs. They have, we haven't even dealt with their artillery yet, which are very capable howitzers that can pinpoint and target better than Iraq military could ever with their howitzers.
You know, Robert, part of this is in the American people. I began our conversation with asking you about the men and women whose lives are on the line. And so the American people don't know just how perilous a situation this is. They believe that we've dropped all these bombs because we keep hearing our people say, oh, the bombs, we've taken out their capacity to do this. We've taken talk is cheap. Okay? They can't believe that they're still firing back because we've backed up the truck, man. We've unloaded between Israel and ourselves the ordnance that we're dropping and have been and continue to drop. It's not going to eradicate people.
It's amazing, isn't it, that we wiped out their Air Force, we wiped out their missile capacities, we wiped this out, but yet they're still bombing Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
They're still launching bombs at air bases and U.S. bases in other countries around the Middle East. They're still able to block the Strait of Hormuz. They got our U.S. Navy, not even thinking about trying to go in there and escort ships because the Navy understands they have missile capacities that could take out those carriers. And we took them out.
Hey Robert, they've already mined the Strait of Hormuz. And you hear our leadership and Pete Hegseth saying, well, we took out 16 of their mine laying boats. Hey, their stuff is in the mountains. Okay, I mean, we tried this with Afghanistan. We tried to we leveled mountains in Afghanistan, Robert. Mm. We really did. We leveled mountains. That's a mountainous terrain, and the people were still there.
And they survive.
Yes,
to fight, because that's right now what we have. Is a country looking to avenge what has been done to it. The backstabbing during negotiations, the killing of children, and the killing of their leader. That's a country that is putting together a united force to take out whatever invasion this country thinks it could lead into it. It's going to, you know, I don't have a doubt that we will get in there.
You mean on the ground?
Yeah. I don't have a doubt that we will be able to get in there and set up and start launching campaigns. But we better resolve ourselves to knowing we're going to be seeing a lot more coffins draped in American flags than we saw coming from Iraq or Afghanistan.
So Robert, we spent 17 years in Iraq. We spent 20 years in Afghanistan. Both of those combined are no Iran.
No, not at all.
So if it took 37 years, you know, theoretically, with Afghanistan and Iraq, they were fighting them simultaneously. And yet we really had to leave Afghanistan and realize, hey.
That situation was hopeless.
Yeah, the mountains, how many mountains can you knock down?
Right.
Right? Well, if you just envision, if we do make the mistake to go into Iran, we're not talking about a short-term situation, Robert.
Never.
Okay? Because that's, you're fighting somebody who is formidable.
Right?
They they have prepared. They've been preparing for this. Right?
Ever since the Iraq War, they've been preparing. They knew what was coming. They have been preparing since 9/11. they knew that this situation was going to develop and escalate to the point where after the countries that were first targeted, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, all those other nonconformist, and I call them nonconformist countries because the majority of the Muslim countries that are working with the U.S. and Western nations are basically monarchies. These are monarchies. These are kings, princes. Right. These are the people who rule those countries. United Arab Emirates,
right.
Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia. I mean, these are all kingdoms. Right. These are all monarchies. Right. They're all like the billionaires of the United States running their countries.
Right.
Right? The countries that were non-conforming were countries that basically were ruled by theologians, people that basically were Islamists. They were what some of these white nationalist Christians would like to see our government be, a Christian government.
Right.
Right? These were Islamic governments.
Right.
So those countries posed a threat to a lot of the monarchies in the Middle East because those countries were dealing more with the needs of their poor and of the masses, where a lot of the countries that are monarchies really catered to more the affluent portion.
And what became westernized.
Yes. And so this pretty much, if you look at how the politics are being laid here, all you need to do is take a look at what's motivating Trump to do all what he's doing. Trump, in the last year and a half, has opened many different business opportunities in those countries. Saudi Arabia,
yeah,
got his new golf courses going on. In Dubai, he's got this huge, huge Trump Tower going on. In Qatar, they got all these. They got businesses going on in these places.
Right.
You know? And these places are pretty much working with the Trump organization and those families. And they're probably sitting there going, you know, we could do a lot more if we get rid of Iran.
Yeah.
We could do a lot more.
Right, they've all got military bases in all those areas.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. You know, Iran, Lebanon, Yemen, all those other non-Sunni-led governments, the Shia-led governments, are not into the whole Western thing, right? And so that is a threat to not only Israel and the United States, but it's also a threat to the monarchies in those countries in the Middle East that Trump always favors and says they're working with us, they're doing... The bottom line is, it's really about who is going to control the wealth in the Middle East.
You know, Robert, I was reading something the other day, and if you don't, you know, I got to admit, man, I watch Al Jazeera news, right? Al Jazeera shows you a completely different
view. Yeah.
On what's taking place. And so we were led to believe that we've taken out all of their missile batteries and their cruise missiles and their supersonic missiles and all of those things. As it turns out, they have barely shot off any of those. They have kept those things.
They're in reserve.
They're playing chess.
Right.
We're playing checkers.
Right.
I mean, it's just true. When Trump put Hegseth in charge, and they gutted the Joint Chiefs.
Yep.
Where all the wisdom,
all the wisdom and experience,
who understood with all these other presidents,
not only the military but the political aspects.
We didn't want to get. You don't want to go there.
Right.
You don't want to start a war with Iran.
Right.
And many presidents, both Democrat and Republicans, knew what the perils were. And they knew the number one peril was the Straits of Hormuz.
Right. Well, it's not only the Strait of Hormuz. Not many people are talking about that other strait.
Okay.
That's on the other side of the Strait of Hormuz that is also vital. And that's going to be probably in the news real soon. And that's called the Strait of Bab al-Mahab. Yemen controls that strait. And that strait has about 12, 15% of the world's energy coming through it. And it goes up also through the Suez Canal. And Yemen, which is a close ally of Iran, is right now itching to get involved. Then they pray every day to see if they could get involved against Israel. And they're a little closer there. And they are looking at closing that strait, which means that another 12 to 15% of energy will be affected in the world economy. And that right now would really put a strain on the world economy energy-wise if the Strait of Hormuz and that El-Mabit Strait is shut down.
So, you know, Robert, we're going to take a short break because of for our sponsor, the American with Civil Liberties. If ever there was a time that an organization like ACLU was out front, it is now. And so we're going to take a short break and hear from them, and we'll come right back. You're tuned into What's Going On with Earl Ingram. My guest is Robert Miranda, community activist and veteran of the Lebanese war and a Marine. We'll be right back.
As the White House threatens to take over state elections, restrict abortion nationwide, and take away our health care, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is the last line of defense for our rights. That's why the Supreme Court election on April 7th is so critical. The ACLU does not endorse or oppose candidates, but wants you to make an informed decision. When it comes to abortion rights, Maria Lazar supported overturning Roe v. Wade and is endorsed by groups that want to ban abortion. Chris Taylor voted against abortion bans and defended abortion rights while working with Planned Parenthood. And on the issue of voting rights in Wisconsin, Maria Lazar defended efforts to rig elections for one political party through extreme gerrymandering of congressional and legislative districts. Chris Taylor opposes rigging the system with extreme partisan gerrymandering. On April 7th, stand up for our rights. Paid for by American Civil Liberties Union, Incorporated.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see.
All right. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram and our great sponsor, the ACLU, you're so excited to have on board. And I also want to, again, reintroduce my guest, Robert Miranda, former Marine. Well, you're not a former. You're always a Marine, right?
Always Marine.
A guy who, you know, put it on the line in Lebanon. And he's also a community activist and, you know, a guy who's always standing on the wall for righteousness and justice, not just in the military, but in everyday life. So I'm excited to have him on board. But, Robert, let's get back to what I think most Americans almost don't want to face. This is something that presidents for decades knew.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I talked about the Joint Chiefs that they ran off who clearly said and knew, we're not going to attempt. This is more trouble than it's worth. And so they know where we are. We know where they are. We'll let things, bygones be bygones. But then I heard Benjamin Netanyahu say, I've been wanting to do this for 40 years. It's my greatest accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
He made the decision that now was the time. And I think the tail wagging the dog, Donald Trump was full of himself after what happened in Venezuela. But he didn't realize it was an elephant, America, jumping on a gnat, Venezuela. He took credit for saying, look at what we did to Venezuela. Come on, man. Yeah. I don't think Venezuela is Iran, man.
No. They didn't have the missile capabilities and the, no.
He said, well, they gave up right away in Venezuela. They gave up right away.
Yeah, yeah. That was, look, to go to your point in regards to the president's all not wanting to get involved in this nonsense that Netanyahu was pushing for 40 years. If you recall, Netanyahu has been out there in the United Nations and around the world for almost the last three decades telling the world that Iran was this close to having nuclear weapons. It was like every other year, Iran was right. Just a week away from having a nuclear weapon. He was doing that for 30 years. And none of the presidents prior to numbnuts here went ahead and took the bait. They're like, this isn't going to work. The intelligence community of the United States was saying, Iran is no threat. We're negotiating. We're talking. They're willing to talk. They're negotiating. We're looking to find a way to make sure that if they do produce nuclear capabilities, it's for energy use only and not weapons. Those talks have been ongoing. But Netanyahu kept saying, no, that's a lie. They're going to produce the bombs. They're just 2 weeks away from producing a bomb. And the world's in big trouble. Now, to your point, who resigned yesterday? Resignation of America's director of counterterrorism says, and in the letter says, Iran never posed an imminent threat. What does the word imminent mean? It means immediate.
Soon,
You know, what more do we have to use as evidence to show that the Cheeto in office was manipulated by the warmonger in Israel, by the guy in Israel who wanted this war so bad that he couldn't convince the presidents prior to this guy in office now to do it because they already knew what he was saying was nonsense. It was not backed by U.S. intelligence. And here, the premier counterterrorism director resigned yesterday from the United States saying this war is poppycock.
Robert, for the worst of all of this is the president said, I'll let you know.
Right.
I'll make the decision when it's time. And he doesn't know with the damage that we've done, there's not going to be an end.
Iran's already given their ultimatum. Iran's already said.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna pay for the damage you've done.
You're gonna pay us reparations, which is gonna be in the hundreds of billions of dollars, right? You're gonna pay us reparations, and you're gonna agree to us having nuclear weapons now.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna have nuclear weapons.
Which means there's no end.
There is no end. Right.
Okay. There is no end, and, you know, you just, if you try to envision where this thing could go, the president of the United States was on television yesterday and said, our former allies basically call them cowards and said, look, 75 years, man, these people have helped keep the peace after World War II and coming together and helping to end the scourge with Germany, and NATO was formed and all the other presidents.
And their sacrifices in helping us defeat the Soviet Union during the Cold War did not matter?
No, man. So, I said Germany, but it's the Soviet Union. But Let me try to get people to understand, Robert. he when he came in, he told NATO, "We're gonna charge you tariffs. Your allies.
Yes, yes.
We don't care what you say. We're gonna charge you first. We're gonna take over Canada. I want that.
We're gonna Greenland.
Make it, yeah, we're gonna make it. You know, the 51st state.
No, he wants to make Venezuela the 51st. Yeah. I mean, what kind of crazy? What kind of crazy does people need to see coming from this guy to see that this guy is crazy?
And then, Robert, he said to them, okay, you know, basically, none of you guys have carried your own weight, okay? This is what you're going to have to start carrying your own weight, and we're not going to be there to support you, okay? He denigrated all of them publicly, their leadership, call them cowards. And then when Pete Hegseth, it was brought to his attention, hey, they're going to do something with the Straits. And, you know, what we're going to be up a creek without a paddle. And then all of a sudden it dawned on him, hey, look at what they're trying to do.
Right.
And then Trump realized, because he said, oh, we'll just send the Navy in there and the Navy will guide every one of those, you know, oil rigs and everything. We're gonna control all that. Won't be much of a trouble. So somebody must have called him and said, hey, man, it ain't like that. That's mm-hmm. not how it works.
That's right.
And when Trump found out, he turned around and he called all NATO allies, hey, y'all need to come here.
It's in your best interest.
Yeah, take care of your business.
Right.
Hey. And so what were they going to say? I mean, I would have said.
Exactly.
Hey, man, I got nothing
for you.
Hold on,
you talked against me?
Yeah.
You put me down? You charged me tariffs? You were making it sound like.
Your allies. We're your allies.
And you were doing it. And now all of a sudden, you want us to put the lives of our children in a war you created without consulting us?
An endless war.
And you think we're just going to say, no problem, Donnie boy? You know what? Go poop your diaper and get away from me. Well, you know, it just mind-boggling. The nonsense, the childish, elementary political games that are coming out of this clown show in the Oval Office. And the people that support this. And we all know, the world knows. This moron is doing all this because the Epstein files are lurking in the shadows. The whole world knows that this is only happening because this guy, the evidence is there to show this guy was raping children, he was molesting children, he was abusing children, and he was working with a sex trafficking network of children that was run by his buddy Epstein. And this guy just does not want all that stuff out there. You know, the world knows this. Everybody knows this, except for those numbnuts of his supporters that are just basically the most, I wouldn't say that they are just lame. Idiots are stupid. It's just that their bigotry is so strong and so hardcore. They are hardcore bigots. And as long as he is attacking black, brown people, people who they say are on the left, it doesn't matter anything about the ethics, the morals, or anything about this guy. He's going after the people they hate.
So, Robert, having said all of those things, if you could, you know, peep into the future, I don't see, and listen, I'm not an eternal optimist. I'm, you know, that's just not who I am. I know there are a lot of people who are eternal optimists and, well, this is going to work out and all of us. We're at a point with this thing, Robert. it may not work out. Okay? Mm-hmm. Let's stop acting like we're not where we are. We're at a place that's not going to end well.
Right.
Okay? I don't care what anybody says. There's no way that this can end well. Not for Iran, not for America, not for the Middle East, not for the world. What could possibly happen here, Robert, and not just militarily, is a global depression.
Right.
Maybe I'm seeing through, some foggy lenses, but I could see that.
Oh,
a global depression.
Yeah, it's peaking from underground. It's rearing its pointy little head from under that rock. It's there.
So none of us living now, for the most part, know anything about a global depression, Rob.
No, they don't understand the meaning of that. No, they don't. They crying right now because they're paying extra bucks on the gas.
Right.
You know, wait until you see nothing in the shelves of your stores.
But they don't think in America that can happen.
See, that's how dumb. That's how dumb dumbs are. Okay. You know, they're not thinking like that. You know, if you are thinking that you're going to be able to live off the land as a way to survive, this land isn't like it was in the 1800s.
Now it's poison.
You know, exactly. The environment has been poisoned by corporate pollution over the decades. It's not as safe as you think, you know, and there's a lot more people out there these days, and they're all going to be hungry and with guns too. And there isn't going to be a lot of land out there to hunt on without you and them competing for that food. And if you think you're going to live off the land without getting into a gunfight for a piece of deer meat, you're going nuts.
So Robert, let's look at the possibilities of a global depression and how and why it could possibly occur. Clearly, when the oil is, Donald Trump said, we're making a lot of money. We've got more oil than anybody else. We're making money.
Yeah.
He fails to understand the rest of the world, the peoples of the world, are 96% of the world's population. America is only 4% of it. 96% of the rest of the world is other than American.
Right.
If there's global depression, that the 4% is not going to hold sway. Well, they still think our military is going to be what protects us. But we're not talking about a rosy scenario for the future of generations that come after us, Robert.
Right. Our children are going to inherit a debt that is going to take 17 generations to try to get out of. It's just mind-boggling, the fact that people are led by a billionaire who has shown he has never cared about the common people, who has shown that he doesn't care about the way the common people live, who is showing it now by saying, well, you're going to pay, and that's just a sacrifice you're going to have to make. And here he's telling them America is going to make money. But what he doesn't say is what part of America is going to make that money. And the part of America that's going to make that money are the oil barons, are the oil companies, the very rich, the very rich investors in Wall Street. That's the part of America he's talking about. That's the one he's saying, we're going to make money. It's going to be a lot of money. We're making a lot of money in America. Nah, America isn't making money. America's rich are making money. But America as a whole is not making money.
You know, Robert, you and I and those within this listening audience have basically been blessed and born and lived in a time where America was supreme and where we actually could live the American dream. Most in this country had an opportunity, the majority of people, to live this unbelievable life that many across the globe weren't able to live. And, you know, gain some modicum of comfort, you know, own a home, can have enough money to maybe go on vacations, buy cars, save some money, you know, have a television in every room. You know, I mean, we've just lived and been born at a blessed time. My father and your father weren't born at that point in time. We've been very fortunate. And made to believe, many of us, that this would go on ad infinitum. It was going to go on forever. This is America the Great. And so we're going to always remain and have this. We're at the precipice right now, Robert, where we were at the apex, our generation. Everything else is headed down the other way.
Yep.
Am I wrong in that assessment?
I think the boomers are the last generation that enjoyed the fact that we were moving in an America that not only was showing potential for prosperity for right. a more diverse population in the history of this United right. States, because it was really getting to where a lot of people who were not of the usual suspects were also able to make some money.
We lived the American dream.
Exactly. But we were also getting to a point where all people were able to enjoy the most beautiful part of America, and that was to live in freedom, yep. in a individual freedom, liberty for the individual, civil liberties. All of that was starting to gel for every American. It was starting to get to the point, you know, segregation started, was destroyed,
right.
put apart. Everything was starting to move in that direction. And then all of a sudden, you know, we saw the power of the corporation start taking control of government in the 80s. In the 80s is when the corporations and the billionaires started really pushing to gain political control, because that movement of a more diverse population being enriched and a more diverse population of enjoying the liberties and the freedoms of what this country promised for everybody was also a threat to the profits of these billionaires and these corporations, because then they would have to pay living wages. Then they would have to hire more people in a more diverse way. They couldn't pit people against each other the way they did when they union bust right. and all that other stuff. And so that push by the corporate powers and by the billionaires and by the very rich to move government started in the 90s, and they started bringing in dark money and all this closet dollars coming in to fund candidates that would move a more pro-corporate agenda. And then at the same time, that's when you started seeing the increase in the Israeli lobby, AIPAC and all those guys, because they all started joining in on that movement. And so that push that was being done at our time, the boomers' time, was a threat to the maximized profits of the very powerful in this country. And they couldn't have it. We go now 3-4 decades later to where we are today. And look what we have in office. We have a guy that has no idea how to govern, no idea how to run a government, and clearly doesn't have any idea how to run a business, because he's always going bankrupt. Right. How do you bankrupt casinos? I mean, it just, you know, that's mind blowing. But anyway, you know, we have replaced diplomats, people who understand how to run government, with morons. Morons who have no control of their emotions, who have no idea of what it is to govern, who run on impulse, who are emotional. You know, right now we are looking at putting a guy who has anger issues to be the new DHS guy. You know, I mean, that just shows you how far back we have fallen.
So Robert, and even worse yet is, you know, a branch of government that should have been in a position historically to stop it, Congress.
Right.
The Congress is afraid of him. Congress, I mean, senators
right.
are afraid of him. And so when that branch of government is afraid of the executive branch, never before has that been the case in this country.
Well, they're afraid of him because they're afraid of losing their money.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the bottom line. He can make phone calls to their funders, to their donors, to the people who put them in office through cash, campaign funds. And they're afraid of losing that money. And that's why they're afraid of him. Money has become the impetus for policy in Washington, D.C. It's not about what is best for America, what is best for the American people. It is what is best for Wall Street, the billionaires, and the major corporations of this country.
So, Robert, you are 100% accurate, and anybody who challenges your assessment, all they have to do is look at a stock market where the Dow Jones is 50,000 or 48, 49, time to time hits 50. And people look at that as the economy.
Right.
And they say, oh, the economy's doing great. Well, no, it's not.
Right.
You shouldn't equate the stock market with the economy. They're not one and the same.
Exactly.
So why are people, you know, they're saying these things, but I guess the American people don't understand.
Well, they're fed with the propaganda by the corporate media. The people who own the media are the people who also invest
right.
in Wall Street. For them, making that money is good. For us, understanding what that means to the rest of us is bad. And if we caught on, if the whole country caught on to the fact that we're being used to fatten up their wallets, and we're sacrificing our wallets because they are the ones in charge of what's going on in Washington, D.C., rather than the people being in charge of what's going on in Washington, D.C. It isn't in the Constitution by the corporation, for the corporation. It's by the people.
By the people, right.
You know? And so these guys have manipulated this whole thing through the corporate control media. That's why very independent news sources like your program and other programs out there are becoming more important and growing, because there are people starting to wake up to this, that the media today is not like it was in the 40s and 50s. There's no Walter Cronkites.
No.
There's no, what was the guy, Merrill?
Yeah.
You know, these guys are all gone. Now we got boneheads like Sean Hannity, Jesse Waters, Laura Ingraham.
Oh, man.
These are pogues. These
puppets.
Are people
puppets.
who just are out there looking for clicks on their podcast.
And being paid well.
And getting paid. I mean, these are millionaires telling you and me that we're doing well. And they're the ones who are benefiting from that lie.
You know, Robert, you know, we've reached our time limit for now. But rest assured, man, we have not heard the last of the conversation with my good friend Robert Miranda, because the sad thing is we're just in the beginning stages of what is historians will talk about long after we're gone.
Yep. America's
time.
America's era of Caligula and Nero is here. We are at that time of Rome when Rome's empire was cracking because of those kinds of people in charge.
You know, Robert, there are people who don't believe that this could have ever happened.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know if you and I could have conceived of this 20, 30 years ago, 25 years ago. I thought America might have been immune to it, even though I knew that there were some things in our nation that weren't right.
Right.
But, man, but to have seen it, although this plan has been going on, Project 2025, for 40 years, 50 years, the beginning parts of this plan were kind of being makeshift put together.
Yep.
And now, you know, it's here.
It's here. It's here. And now we've got to work to try to reverse it. And that's important. The midterms that are coming up, it's going to be important to put in the right people to turn this around.
All right, my friend, we got to leave it there.
Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister, what's going on.
That's a wrap for What's Going On with Earl Ingram. We'd like to thank our sponsors, ACLU, and all of you who have taken time out to listen. Look for this podcast and tell others about it. My good friend, Robert Miranda. That's a wrap for What's Going On with Earl Ingram.
Right on.